For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mere hours after the Illegal Curve post-game show ended, Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, and Ezra Ginsberg are back with you for the next couple of hours to talk about everything to do with the Winnipeg Jets, looking back at last night, looking back at the road trip thus far, previewing Sunday in Chicago, and Tuesday back at home against the defending Stanley Cup champions for the second time this year. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this Saturday morning. Ezzy, love the toque. Dave, love the hat, love the fire, love all the vibes I'm getting from you guys.
Lots of love early on in the show.
Lots of love. I'm feeling the love.
There's going to be lots of hate later, so we might as well get that love in there first. So.
Exactly. We'll let the love flow right now. The hate will inevitably come, as it always does. But a lot of that hate is also tinged with love, so it's sort of a love-hate relationship, if you will. But in any event, nice to see you both. Nice to see so many familiar faces, so many new faces in the chat joining us live, bright and early on this Saturday morning. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, what's up, boys? We have quite a bit to talk about. That game last night was kind of crazy at the beginning, pretty normal in the middle, and then obviously crazy at the end. People are still talking about the goal that was allowed to stand, allowing the Stars to tie that game up and send it into overtime. But I don't think any of our opinions have changed. Like, I don't know about you guys and people watching, but I think I've seen the definition of that rule now tweeted out at least 100 times. And even with that definition, I realize that according to that definition, the goal by Jason Robertson should have been allowed, but I guess it might be time to rewrite that rule.
You know where what I've been seeing, and I was discussing this with our buddy Joe Piscucci on Twitter. They should have blown it dead, obviously, for the helmet being off. But in my mind, in my estimation, and I know that, you know, the Jets obviously end up with the victory, but I think that this is just, I mean, the poor officiating is just, you know, on display here, and it's so vivid that I think it warrants further discussion. And imagine if the Jets had lost the game, people would be going absolutely apoplectic about it. But even more from my perspective, as I watch the replay again and again and again, to me, that is goaltender interference. You know, to me, you know, Jamie Benn is going at Connor Hellebuck. You know, regardless of Josh Morrissey's intervention, Josh, and we sort of touched on it briefly on the post game show yesterday. Josh Morrissey comes in and he gives, you know, Ben a nudge, and there's no disputing that he makes physical contact with Jamie Benn. But in my mind and to my eye, that's almost happening simultaneous with Ben on his own going into Connor Hellebuck. So, and this isn't me wearing Jets-colored glasses. I think you folks have been watching the show long enough and have been listening to me long enough to know that I call it pretty fair. I'm not, I'm not one side or the other.
You're a true centrist, Drew.
I am a true centrist. But to me, there's goaltender interference there. I don't understand, it's almost like the officials were trying to overcomplicate a situation there, in to my mind. To me, you got, first of all, the helmet should blow it dead immediately, as we all discussed. And then you have goaltender interference there. Jamie Benn is going for Connor Hellebuck. He's trying to hit him. And I understand why Benn is doing that. I don't fault him for it. He's trying to give his team an opportunity to get the tying goal. I don't understand how it's not goaltender interference as well, just because Josh Morrissey comes in and does his job. What's Josh Morrissey supposed to do? Not, try and prevent Jamie Benn from doing his thing?
Did we just make $20, by the way?
I think he did. Thank you to Stan Scott for sending us some love in the form of $20. Appreciate it. That's very kind of you. Completely unnecessary. But, very generous of you, Stan, and very much appreciated. But, Dave, maybe I'm wrong, and tell me if I'm wrong, but to me, you got goaltender interference there forgetting about the helmet situation.
Exactly. But the irony to me, Drew, actually, is that you don't forget about the because one is, in my mind, one is open to more interpretation than the other. And, you know, we have the benefit of watching this 17,000 times and trying to analyze it. Whereas we're not sitting there trying to watch on an iPad, with 20,000 people yelling and screaming and the noise and everything going on. So there's a lot more involved. It's very easy to be dispassionately and sitting back and saying, well, this is the way it should have been. But the reality to me is I don't care so much. I mean, look, Jamie Benn is not there's not a lot of accidents with that guy. He's been in the league long enough, you know? And so, you know, does he cause, I mean, do I think he intended on knocking the helmet off, or do I think he maybe tried to get a little bit of touch on Hellebuck knowing he was going to go around the net and pass it in front and hope that something like what happened? Yeah, I probably do. But to me, it's less germane to the conversation than the idea that a guy literally, what?
That's just a funny
line. Oh, I just saw Kenny's comment.
Anyways, it's just a funny line.
Okay, but the point is that, so for me, Drew, that when you have a guy, again, it doesn't, all of the other stuff doesn't make a difference because there's no immediacy to Jamie Benn's actions. You know, like Josh Morrissey said it perfectly. You know, what did it take? 3 seconds to take the puck from when he knocks Hellebuck over to going around the net to getting the puck in front. So yes, I agree that it did seem like goalie interference, but I would say that, you know, that to me is less egregious simply because there is more interpretation. And again, you're asking the linesman or the ref, sorry, to make a call with a lot of noise, right? And well, again, like I said, we've watched it 100 times. What?
In consultation with Toronto. With
sure, of course. But I'm just saying that it's very quick. It's a lot different. So like, you know, it's that's gray area for me, but black and white is the fact that you've got, you know, and one of the things that really isn't being discussed, and I, as much as I respect Craig Button, I disagree with his assessment after the game because he said Connor Hellebuck wasn't in danger. Well, you know, here's the problem. If that Robertson shot, because remember, Robert, and look, these guys are the NHL. They can generally hit the net, but there's a lot of action going on. If that puck is errantly shot at Connor Hellebuck's head, he could die.
Well, that's the thing here that I think is being somewhat lost in that, like, look at, you guys know, I mean, and a lot of people, Jamie Benn was on the Canadian Olympic team. Jamie Benn's a fantastic player. We're not taking anything away from Jamie Benn. We're just isolating this incident. And to Drew's point, I agree. Like, if you wanted to spend, you know, a few hours, you know, dissecting each frame, I think most people would come to the conclusion that Morrissey was following Benn into Hellebuck. He didn't push him. Like, Ben, you can make the argument that Ben was already going to make contact with Hellebuck. So much that
100%.
He's a big man. Ben's a big man. Hellebuck's a big man. Hellebuck ends up, not only does his helmet come off, but he's shaken up. He ends up spending, you know, several minutes. I don't know if that's safe to say minutes, but let's say dozens of seconds on the ice. It seemed like it was a few minutes that Hellebuck was, you know, face first on the ice. So you have that, right? Like, you have Hellebuck was definitely shaken up. So he's out of the play. His helmet is off. And then a goal is scored. So, like, to me, yeah, like, you have to look at it like that. Like, he had absolutely no chance to get into the play. And even if he did, like, people were saying, like, was he going to save the puck with his head? It's dangerous at that point. So I think you almost have to make, you know, a rule change and say that if a goalie's helmet comes off, regardless of what's happening on the ice, the play is blown dead.
Well, or quantify it. Don't leave it up to gray area. Say there's a 1 second immediacy because there's no reason why you can't quantify it. I mean, they can break these films down, you know, frame by frame, and you can say that, yeah, you know, look, they look at the offside rule by a millimeter to see if a guy's skate is offside. So why don't you just put a time factor on it instead of leaving it up to interpretation? Don't make this a gray area. I understand why goaltender interference probably needs to be a gray area, but, you know, when you're talking about the helmet being knocked off, don't leave it up to interpretation. Just say, if you don't score within 1 second of the goalie's helmet being knocked off, then it doesn't count. And then there's no gray area anymore. And, you know, that just seems straightforward and takes any sort of complicating factors out of it. I'll be honest. I had to go back and watch it this morning to really fully realize that when Ben gets the puck, I mean, I sort of got lost in the shuffle of everything that was happening last night. But when Ben gets the puck from behind the net, I sort of initially thought that he just put it to Robertson and Robertson shot it. You know, I had to go back and watch it again. I said, holy shit, he doesn't pass it to Robertson.
Yeah.
It goes to Sagan.
Yeah.
And then Sagan has time with his back to the net to turn around and pass it to Robertson.
Hellebuck is laying on the ice face first with no opportunity to even try to make a save.
That's
key though, right, Drew? When you're talking about the timing, like to me when you have that type of rule in place with interpretation, like we talked about, I mean, I doesn't that get factored in that Hellebuck is on the ice, as opposed to just like if we were just talking about a little tap, right? Like Ben just nudged him a little bit and he couldn't get back to the play, but Hellebuck was legitimately like bowled over and was on the ground and completely out of the play. Like, to me, that should be factored in a little bit, shouldn't it? But regardless, I mean, the goal was allowed, but I don't think anybody's, like, if anything, guys, everyone's opinion has strengthened. It hasn't changed. No. You know what I mean? Like, it's like one of those things,
Drew,
it's 12 hours later, Dave, and you're still like, Nelson Emerson back in the mid-90s when he just threw the puck into the net. You're like, how the hell did that actually count? Like, I know that the referees counted it, but there's absolutely no reason why that should have counted.
Well, I mean, and even further to Drew's point and kind of the irony of the entire situation, Ben didn't even get an assist because Pavelski touched the puck, Sagan touched the puck,
right,
and Robertson scored the goal. So the assist actually went, it's the famous fourth assist. Ben actually didn't get an assist. Pavelski got the touch because it was marginal. It touched off Pavelski. Then it went to Sagan. Now, Sagan, if he shoots and scores, I think you're a little bit closer to something.
It's still not immediate, but it's a little bit closer.
I agree, but it's a little bit closer.
The officials deserve the second assist.
Yeah, that's true. But the point is, then it goes from Sagan to Robertson and into the net. And again, the whole thing would be, first of all, the ruling should have been based on the rule. If there's an immediate scoring chance, then the play could continue, but there wasn't. So that in alone should have been enough to not disallow that goal. But again, I stand by the idea that you've got a goaltender who's completely not wearing a helmet. I mean, think about it. What's the rule?
And on the ice.
He's
out of the play. He's injured.
If he gets up immediately, if the helmet, you know, if he stays in, you know, if his,
if he goes through the butterfly or something like that,
if his primal instincts take over and, you know, and he is able to bounce back despite losing the helmet and he gets back in position without a helmet on, how quickly they blow it. I bet you blow it quicker.
Think about it. When you lose your helmet, you have to go off the ice. Like it's player safety. So you've got a goaltender who is completely looks like he's dead. Again, he didn't move. For, as Ezzy said, I don't know, I can't quantify it, but it seemed
like it was a couple of minutes. It was probably 1 minute, but.
No, but I mean, it felt like a lifetime, right? Especially if you're the Jets and you're thinking you can't afford to lose Connor Hellebuck. But the point I'm making is that
when you're waiting in line at the Toronto International Airport.
Exactly. But what I'm getting at is that, you know, you've got a goaltender who's completely vulnerable. And if that puck hits him in the side of the head without a helmet on, he could die. I mean, I'm sorry, like it's stark. But it's the truth. And so the reality is, if you really
have Jason Robertson shooting the puck.
Well, he's got 17 goals, so he probably wasn't missing the net. Maybe give it to somebody else. But the point I wanted to make, the only thing I'm trying to make here is that to me, you have a player safety issue that should have immediately necessitated that play getting. And look, I know there's all this anger because
the comment up there, sorry, right now, Dave.
I think it's a great comment.
If I'm not mistaken, that was against the Devils, was it not?
I'd have to go back
and look, but I'm pretty sure it was the Jets or the Devils. And
that was the Devils. It was against the Devils.
It was the Devils. And you're right. Brian Little never played again. Another guy, Steve Yzerman, took a puck to the head. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Brian Berard. I mean, there's a lot of Berard might have been a stick. I might be getting a few wrong there with Berard, but
Berard was a stick to the eye. To the eye, right.
Sorry about that one. But I remember Steve Yzerman. Remember, I think that was 2004 during the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken, or it was around that year that the Flames went on that run to the Stanley Cup final. But the point is that, when you're talking about, you know, guys getting pucks in the head, I mean, that's major concussion situations, right? And guys' careers can be affected. So there's a lot of things at play here. And I know we're going to get into the game and you know, other things today, but it's still really shocking that in the best league in the world, that goal was allowed to stand.
Well, and you know, just to you know, Rick Bonus was incredible. I watched the post game availability after the show just to do the when I was doing my post game recap on illegalcurve.com, and I you know, Rick Bonus was incredulous. You know, he essentially said like, look, you know, Ottinger's pad blows off, plays whistle dead, you know, which makes sense, right? I mean, you're not going to expect him to make a save, you know, 100 mile per hour save without a pad on, and you know, so you know that immediately gets blown dead, and I'm sorry, there's no excuse for it. There's two refs, two linesmen who are all watching the play, and the puck is right there. So someone definitely saw Hellebuck go down. Someone definitely saw Hellebuck without his helmet on. And you know what? One of the things we don't talk about enough, and I know that a lot of people will reference this, refs have to be, you know, made available after a game. I'm sorry. You should be able to have to answer questions as to why.
I don't think that's going
to
happen, Dave.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think that's so either. But I'm just saying that to me, it doesn't make any sense. I would love to know what the official was thinking when they saw that play and didn't make that call.
I've talked about this before in the NBA. And first of all, it's not like the refs have to be made available to every single member of the media. It's called a pool reporter. A pool reporter is one member of the media who, you know, talks to the officials, asks them the questions, and then shares the information with everybody. It happens all the time in leagues all throughout the world, more, you know, in professional sports leagues that are run better than the NHL is run.
And they're standing in a pool when they ask the question?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a swimming pool reporter. They're wearing bathing suits and they're standing in a swimming pool. Sometimes it's a hot tub.
Drew, you've known me for 20 years. You know that I can't resist.
Sometimes they come down a water slide when they're doing the interview. It's sort of up to the reporter how they want to conduct the interview. But yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right there, Ezzy. But you know, they need to make that official available so you can hear from them, not the mealy mouth statement that the NHL releases after every video review that says actually nothing. It just sort of gives you they reiterate the interpretation of the rule and then don't actually say anything. There should be a pool reporter who speaks about it. And even if they don't want to speak about it, the NBA has a report. I think it's called it's either called the final minute report or the final 3 minute report, where they sort of outline interesting and or controversial calls. It's not an interview, but it's, you know, a written report. And oftentimes they apologize or they admit when an error has been made. They're more transparent with the process than the NHL is. And I do believe that this is a function of a lack of leadership among the NHL, among NHL officials. These officials are so anonymous and they're so neutered in terms of taking charge of the situation on the ice that how many times do you just sort of see no call made at all? They're just sort of sitting around and then they get together to discuss it. There's no decisiveness in action by the officials, oftentimes, not specific to last night, but in general, there's no decisiveness in how they call the game, which of course leads to the uncertainty and fans and players having a lack of confidence in the job that the officials do.
The officials in the NHL have to be more accountable. And you're right. Having a pool reporter and having the officials explain themselves, whether it's just, you know, a very simple brief. I mean, nobody's looking for a thesis here. We just really want to know, okay, what happened? Give us a little bit of an explanation. You're absolutely right. And the thing is, we've talked about the officiating quite a bit already this year, maybe more so than in previous years. And you think about it, guys, it could come down to a point. It could be a point between the Stars and the Jets, you know, missing the playoffs or finishing second in the Central or something like that. So every single point in the regular season is important. And obviously, I don't think we're going to be talking about this in March, guys. Like, I'm pretty sure the Jets will be comfortably in a playoff spot, and the Stars might be as well, the way they've been playing thus far. But I think the point is, we see this far too often, and that was an egregious bad call. Like, that was not something where most people were on the fence. Like, this wasn't like a, you know, Mark Scheifele, Jake Evans in the playoff situation where we're having that debate, you know, should Scheifele have been suspended? It's like, there's not that much gray area here. Hellebuck's knocked over. He's on the ice and his helmet's off. He doesn't have a chance to make a save. It shouldn't have counted. Period.
Last word on this, and this is just, I find this to be interesting. It doesn't speak, you know, volumes, but it probably does. The Dallas Stars initially tweeted out the winning goal. Now that video, the tweet is still up, but the video that was attached
the tying goal, you mean?
The tying goal. Sorry. Yes. They tweeted out the tying goal, the Robertson goal with Hellebuck sprawled out. And the tweet is still up, but the video itself has been deleted. Take that to mean whatever you want it to mean, but I do find that to be interesting. I don't know if it's the Stars who deleted the video or if it's the NHL who deleted the video, but somebody deleted the video that actually showed the tying goal in last night.
Not sure game. Why they deleted it, because the goal ended up standing. So even if it shouldn't have
counted, I think because they were getting torched to social media, as I think that a lot of people were embedding, tweeting their video and
embedding going.
Yeah, so I think as a result, they probably felt like, "Hey, we're gonna get rid of the evidence." But that just leads to conspiracy theories, and it's the internet.
Even though that video is readily available on NHL.com and other sites,
nobody ever said they were geniuses with their social media logic. But anyways, the Jets were victorious last night, and it is a big 5-4 victory for the Jets. They win the season series as a result against the Dallas Stars.
How crazy is that, by the way, that the Jets still haven't played the Predators yet, and they've already played the Stars 3 times.
It's odd scheduling is what it is. I mean, and the truth of the matter is, I want to see more than 3 games against
your
division rivals.
Yeah, you want to see minimum 4, I think.
I think at least a minimum 4, home and home at least 2, because this is where the hate is going. You think these teams like each other?
No.
The ties between the two teams, of course, with Rick Bonus are now extensive. There's no love lost. You've played them 3 times. You could see the, especially the hard feelings. The Jets probably feel that the Stars
see you in April.
Yeah. And now there's nothing until April. And now you start fresh with a 3-game series, you'll start playing against the Predators more, and that's great.
A Jets-Stars first-round series, Drew, would be unbelievable. Both, great goaltending. I mean, they're very similar teams, if you think about it. Like a combination of skill and size. You've got some younger players and some veteran players. We talked about Ben and Sagan and Pavelski, right? So it would be a fantastic first-round series or second-round series, whatever. But I agree with you. How good would it be to see a rematch in, January or February or whatever, right? So
I mean, that's one of the things I think
the schedule worked out.
And that's one of the things I think the AHL does well, is that, you do see your – I mean, that's probably for monetary reasons because they're trying to keep, but you do see these teams. I mean, look, the Moose saw Milwaukee 17 times last year. That's a bit much.
Yeah.
But, at the same time, you want to be able to see – games against, because that's where the heat is, right? That's where the hate develops, and that's where you create rivalries. And it used to be, and you're right, it's weird that it's not. I mean, it's funny because you see what happens when it's not spread out, right? 3 times in basically a month, that you've seen the same team. Well, you develop something, but now you're not going to see them again, like I said, maybe the entire year, or you'll see them potentially in a playoff. So it's definitely a bit unusual, but It's like, as you just said, that's just the way the cookies crumble.
I agree with Mark that's saying those Stars uniforms were beautiful. I kept thinking
you like those ones?
Oh, yeah. I kept thinking Sergei Zubov and
Richard Matvichuk.
I was getting some flashbacks of Jamie Langenbrunner, of course, who went on.
I didn't like him, though. I said to Ezzy, I said, after seeing how significant, how awesome those Minnesota Wild jerseys were.
Yes.
Then you like those were unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And then to go from that to the Stars were like, as he's right, they were a true throwback, but they weren't a nice true throwback. They were just kind of like, they were like that, like a remembrance of like.
Did anybody else pick up on, by the way, one of the most famous allowed goals during the crease was Brett Hull? Like there was something with the Stars wearing those vintage jerseys, and then it disallowed goals. And
okay, well that's a good little tie-in.
We all remember Brett Hull's goal on Hasek.
We all remember that. Hasek was
in the
superhero
crease.
Performance there, trying to Herculean performance to try and get the Sabres the Stanley Cup back in 99, if I recall correctly.
It was 99,
I did not like those jerseys. I put the Wednesday night jerseys, those Minnesota Wild jerseys.
Those were nice too.
Those ones are spectacular. The throwback to the North Star.
Yeah. Shout out to the Broughton brothers.
There you go. Yeah, exactly right. Let's go to break. When we come back, Murad Atesh is going to join us. We'll talk more about last night's game. We'll look forward to this weekend. Touch on the Jets season so far. Good to catch up with Murad. Stay with us. It's Saturday morning. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show rolls on live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. It's a Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg are with you. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show rolls on here on our YouTube channel and all of our social
media. We're rolling media like Limp Bizkit, Drew.
Rolling. Like, I'll stop now. That's basically all the Limp Bizkit I know. I think I know anything
else. Let's make Limp Bizkit cool again. Can we do that, guys? Do you think?
Probably not.
That's something we can do.
We're influencers, Ezzy, but I'm not sure we're that significant influencers.
We're more into the fitness stuff, like being influencers, like how not to be fit.
Yes, how not to be fit is it's a very unique influencing that we're doing. But yes, that is that's a niche market, and we're happy to try and tackle that niche market.
Man, you should see that TikTok video of me just sitting on the couch eating potato chips.
Well,
one of the best TikToks I've ever put out there.
I thought it was a controversial decision when you decided to eat your pancake today wrapped in a stick of butter. I thought that was
it's so good. It's so bad, but it's so good.
Yes, exactly. Once it hits your lips, you just got to have one more.
I didn't actually eat that, by the way. That's a Simpsons reference. Drew was referencing Homer doing that on an episode. I didn't actually do that. My cholesterol is very high, but I'm not that ridiculous.
Now, do you know that it's high, or is this just a guess? Have you been to a doctor recently that said, "Sir, your cholesterol"?
Well, I actually don't think I actually have been diagnosed with high cholesterol, but let's be honest, it's definitely not low.
Yeah. Maybe that's something you want to look at, but we can deal with that after the show when we stage our health-related intervention. You have a Peloton at home. Get on that Peloton bike, my friend.
Yeah, I have not used it once. Naomi's the Pelotoner in our family. I've looked at it and thought about it, and then I've looked at the couch and thought about that, and the couch won.
You shuddered in fear and moved away and decided to stay reclining on the couch. A very reasonable...
There's too much yelling with Peloton, I just want, if someone was talking to me softly, just saying just keep going, do another 5 minutes, Ginsberg. But it just seems like a lot of yelling, and just, it seems a little too intense for me.
Well, on the Peloton screen, they have the numbers about how fast you're going and how, what your resistance level is at and what your, they combine those two and what the output is. Maybe for you, Ezzy, they can do a customized thing where they say, if you've gone this far, you get this many potato chips, so that you can really sort of...
Yeah, exactly. I need some positive reinforcement, Drew.
Yeah, positive reinforcement in this case, of course, being more potato chips and things of that nature. Yeah. Murad going to join us in a couple minutes. Ezzy, maybe you want to shoot him a message, see where he's at. But
my number's blocked.
That's just by me. This Jets team, and we'll talk to Murad about it when he joins us. What's impressive to me, Dave, is they've been able to minimize the number of bad results they've had in a row this year. They had the bad game in Minnesota on Wednesday, a terrible game, but immediately they come back with a better effort. They had a a stretch of bad games when they went out west, but they were managing to get points there, but they admitted that it was not sustainable. So to me, that's one of the big differences that you're seeing in this team, is that they're keeping their poor performances to a minimum, not stringing them together two in a row, three in a row, four in a row, five in a row in terms of bad performances. And that is what makes you a playoff team, is when you're able to just minimize those poor performances in a row.
Yeah, and we've talked about this. That wasn't something they were doing last year. They were losing those, two, three games in a row, four games in a row. And that was something that so far, and you're, through 19 games of the season now, they've managed to avoid. And so it's, that has been significant, that, they sit where they sit, which is 3 points back of Dallas in first place. With two games in hand, because of the fact that they've managed to avoid that exact scenario. And look, we talked about it. When they're not comfortably, but they're, 5 points up on the teams that are chasing them with a game in hand or two games in hand. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. And we're not scoreboard watching already, a quarter of the way through the season. But, you'd pay attention to these types of things.
Drew, have you redacted a comment? What's going on there?
What do you mean?
What are you talking about?
The comment that's up there, I didn't see it. It was just a black bar.
Oh, no. It was there. I saw it. Yeah.
Oh.
As I think your screen's gone a little
Well, obviously, guys, I'm hallucinating.
Yeah. It's his low blood sugar, folks.
Ezzy, if you wanted the mic, you could have just said, Dave, I got to say something.
And that comment that Drew just posted, or I'm not sure if Dave put it up there. There was
I put it up.
Like text. It was just a bar. Anyways,
you know,
maybe it was
just my vision impairment is a side effect of diabetes. You might want to just throwing that out there, not making a joke, not trying to take it lightly. But, you know, as somebody who clearly has bad vision, you might want to make sure that everything's going all
good. Spencer Sutton, okay, just hold on, Ezzy. Can you see Spencer's comment?
Oh, yeah. Spencer's in the chat. Here we go.
There you go. Can you see that, Ez?
Yeah, I can see that. I didn't see the previous one. Was that the same comment?
No, it was a different comment, but it was.
It would have been funny if that was the comment, and then I couldn't see it about vision. But yeah, anyways, yeah, I definitely need to start eating more kale.
Dave,
anyways, as you go on,
now that we know Ezzy's vision is okay, continue on.
Well, I mean, that was such a comment. I've kind of lost my train of thought, but I think
ultimately. By the way, guys, Murat just told me that he forgot to set an alarm, so he's going to come on in about 5 minutes.
There you go.
That's okay. There's going to be some serious bedhead with Murat, but that's okay.
Yeah, might be a little bedhead.
Yeah, that's okay. We can razz him. I mean,
I'm envious of people who have bed head. My kids come out of bed and their hair is going Don King style in 150,000 different directions. I'm envious.
All right, we've had enough segues. Let's keep it tight here. Come on. But the point is,
this segment brought to you by Rogaine.
Yeah, but I will give Mark the comment I just had up that Drew inexplicably took down. Good teams win games even when they play mediocre, and that's one of the things the Jets have managed to do. And look, we talked about it, or Drew talked about it when he introduced. The idea was that, you know, even on the West Coast, when they went to LA and got pummeled and shouldn't have gotten any points and even, you know, escaped Vegas with a point, there were games the Jets didn't deserve to win, but, you know, you have that goaltender that equalizes things and they won or got points. And similarly, they've now been able to wash themselves of these sort of poor efforts and bounce back and have a stronger one. And that's, again, like I said, it's not something we saw with this team consistently last year. And that, I think, is a major difference. And that's the reason why they sit where they sit in the standings as opposed to, you know, looking up and trying to chase.
Yeah. And sorry, I was just going to say, Drew, like, you know, you talk a lot about, you know, where the Jets are. And obviously, like, if you look at points percentage, I believe the points percentage is just behind the Stars, but they've got those games in hand. But if you think about it, like, if they only have, let's say, three of those six wins in overtime, which would be obviously 3 points, then you're only a couple of points, literally a couple of points ahead of the Blues, right? Who are currently in, I believe, the wild card spot, right? So, I mean, the 6-0-1 record in overtime to me is probably the biggest story of the first 19 games, right, guys? Like, you know, you think about, you know, all the talk about how well the Jets have played defensively and how good Hellebuck has been. It's great. But, like, to me, they've had more of a killer instinct and they've been more aggressive in overtime. Like, you saw that yesterday. Like, you know, these goals are
out on Monday too.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, this has been to me a strategy for the Jets in overtime. Like, they have been much better and much more aggressive. And that's the difference right now between them being, you know, close to first in the division as opposed to being closer to a wild card spot. So, you know, Josh Morrissey deserves a lot of credit, you know, for his couple of goals. But, you know, guys, the regular guys that have been put out there, I mean, we've seen Adam Lowry out there, right? Like Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, this has been a real story and could ultimately be the difference between the Jets finishing, you know, first or second in the division versus third or fourth, right? And obviously, we're only 19 games into the season, so the Jets have to continue this, right? But so far, they're basically unbeatable in overtime with the exception of that game against Vegas.
Well, I highlighted Grace's comment on the screen, and Grace said, I agree, Ezzy, last year they lost those games in overtime. And she's completely correct. You remember the Jets' record in overtime last year was abysmal. And think about how many of those, you know, those extra points they missed out on. Now, they, you know, obviously there were more deep-rooted issues, and that wasn't the reason why the Jets didn't, you know, make the playoffs last year, and they had the horrible year that they had. But when you're if you perform well in overtime, and it's
11 overtime losses last year, Drew.
Well, I think that led the league, if I'm not mistaken. It was pretty damn close to leading the league. Somebody else can look it up right now. But, you know, that winning those games in overtime are just extra points. They're bonus points. They're free points, because the 3-on-3 game is so different than 5-on-5, and it's such an anomaly, and it's, you know, you can't really replicate it. But, you know, you're feeling a lot better about yourself taking 2 points in Dallas and taking 2 points against the Hurricanes, particularly how both of those games ended, than you are if you lose those games in overtime. I mean, those are sort of, you know, punches in the gut if you're losing both of those games in overtime, as opposed to winning. Winning, you know, flushes a lot of the bad taste of how last night ended. It flushes a lot of the bad taste how Monday night ended. And so it's important, Dave, that the Jets have been able to succeed in overtime this year when they weren't last year.
Yeah, and Ezzy and I were going through it before the show started, talking about, like, the, you know, we're incredulous because we were like, what is it, 5 wins, 6 wins? And we went through the season, we're like, wow, 6-0-1 because
half
of that.
Half of the Jets' wins have been in overtime.
Now, I will say also, you know, you don't, it's a lot, one of the points made, and I'm talking about a point, was that it's a lot less costly to do that against Carolina and to get those 2 points than it is to allow Dallas to pick up a point, you know, ultimately. But you win the season series against Dallas, so that's obviously important. But at the same time, yeah, this is something we're not used to seeing with this Jets club, which again, ironically, is largely the same team that we saw last year with a few changes here or there. But you've essentially got the same drivers, right? Those are the same.
And no Nikolai Ehlers, right, Dave? Like all of these wins.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I believe all of the wins.
Yeah.
The Montreal one was the first one. I don't think he's been there for any of
No, he hasn't.
So you've won 6 games. He's
played 2 games
without Ehlers, right?
Yeah, he played in the Rangers game and he played in the Dallas game.
So that. Yeah, he's played 2 games this year. I mean, you know, that, and you can't not talk about that, because if you had told anybody, first of all, if you had told anyone that the Jets are going to be, you know, 12-6-1 through 19 games, people would have been surprised at that record. And then if you told anyone that the Jets were going to be 12-6-1 and Nikolai Ehlers has played 2 of your 19 games, people would have been even more incredulous at that record. So the Jets, you know, you can't mention the Jets record without mentioning the fact that they've still been doing it and continue to be doing it and will be doing it at least for the next month or so without Nikolai Ehlers in the lineup. Let me ask you guys this, though. We touched on the fact that they're winning in overtime. Does it concern you that of all the teams presently in a playoff spot throughout the NHL, the Jets have the fewest number of regulation time victories? Does that concern you? Or would you say counter to that, well, look at the last 2 games where the Jets really were in the driver's seat in the last few minutes, except for some just completely inexplicable collapses, that they'd have 8 regulation wins as opposed to 6, and you're less concerned because of that?
A win is a win, right? Like, and we all know that, but like, sure, you would like to be locking these games down and not allowing teams to tie games up late, but then you're getting the extra point in overtime. So obviously, guys, this isn't sustainable. Like you can't sustain this winning percentage in overtime. Like, the Jets are not going to finish the season 15-0-2 or something like that in overtime. I mean, maybe they could, but you guys know what I'm saying. I mean, it's just not likely. Sooner or later, the Jets are going to lose another game in overtime. I think we all agree on that. Even though if Morrissey continues his heroics, that might not happen very soon. But yeah, I mean, so you don't like, you know, again, when you pull a goalie and it's a little bit chaotic and you've got skilled teams like Carolina and Dallas, that's the thing. Like, Dallas is one of the better offensive teams. We talked about their special teams, right? I think second or third best power play, if I'm not mistaken, right? And and fourth best penalty kill. So this is a good even strength team and a good special teams team. So yeah, you don't like the fact that, you know, the Jets have allowed some of these late goals as of late, or you don't like the fact that maybe some of these games have gone to overtime, but they're winning, and that's what really matters. So yeah, we could talk about how, you know, the Jets, that wasn't their best defensive effort last night. But you also have to give credit to Dallas. They're a really good team. Like, they're most likely going to be a playoff team this year. We don't know, obviously, where they're going to finish. And I think Colorado at the end of the season, is going to finish first. But I mean, OT thrillers are always good in my books. And I will now give it to the man they know they call Murat.
Murat, no, take the toque off. We were promised bedhead. We want to see the bedhead. Okay, you know, I wonder what it was like. Okay, now we got some flow going. That's enviable. I got to say, I'm getting a little jealous right now.
Lots of handsome happening on the bottom of the screen here.
There is a lot of handsome happening there. Good morning, handsome. Nice of you to join us. Late night last night? Were you up watching, you know, were you going frame by frame, Zapruder film style, fitting that they were in Dallas last night, to see the no call on Connor Hellebuck that led the game into overtime?
What a reverence. I mean, yes, I was. I was up very late You know, I think I published my column about the whole, I mean, it wasn't goaltender interference.
I disagree with you.
Well, I mean, as it's written,
the gloves are off.
A situation where Morrissey puts Ben into Hellebuck. And so that collision, I don't see as goaltender interference. I believe that Morrissey's push is what accelerated Ben and created the contact. But it's everything that happens after that, that to me was a joke. It was an absolute joke. And when a goaltender's helmet comes off and goes to the ice and he goes to the ice, you know, if you didn't know the NHL rulebook, you'd think you'd have to blow that down immediately on account of safety. Mm-hmm. You go even half a second and realize Hellebuck's not getting up, you'd consider that you might have to blow that one down out of safety. If you consult the NHL rulebook, they have to blow it down unless there is an impending and immediate scoring chance available. And for me, Jamie Benn collecting the puck behind the net does not constitute an immediate and impending scoring chance. His next play is to center the puck, which, okay, if you're being extremely generous, like soccer, you're playing the advantage, and you're extending the definition of immediate and impending, and you want to just like go for a ride with it. Well, the puck goes to Tyler Seguin in front, and Tyler Seguin has his back to the goal. He's boxed out by Axel Johnsson-Fjällby. So he has to make a second pass to the point to Jason Robertson, who ends up scoring the goal. And for me, that two-step process, the fact that he had his back to the goal, that Ben was behind the net when it all began, there's nothing immediate and impending about it to me. So, yeah, I think that in terms of, you know, basic common sense, guy without a helmet on, it's a goaltender and their shot's incoming. That's a blow-it-down situation. The NHL blew it when it came to safety. And I also think that the NHL blew their own goal, or their own rule, pardon me, when it came to how they're supposed to interpret the helmet falling to the ice.
You know, from my perspective, we touched on this earlier in the show. You know, we've been talking about this for a lot of the show, of course, because it's a hot topic after last night's Jets victory. To me, I thought it was goaltender interference, because I, from my perspective, and I appreciate your opinion on this one, of course, I see Ben going into Hellebuck regardless of Morrissey's intervention. I think Ben is not trying to knock off Hellebuck's helmet, but he's going to go and make contact with Hellebuck to try and interfere a little bit, regardless of what Morrissey does in that situation. To me, Ben's target is Hellebuck immediately to try and get him off out of position, or to just try and create a scoring chance for his team. And I don't fault him for that. I think that's just a good veteran move right there by a guy who certainly knows how to play on the edge of the rules. But regardless of that part, why not, you know, put a quantifier on what immediate means in this exchange? Why not say that unless the puck is in the net within 1 second of the goalie's helmet being off, then it's a good goal? Why leave it up to the gray area and the interpretation, when, to me, for player safety's sake, you could just pretty much make this one cut and dry, a second and a half, you know, whatever the buffer you're comfortable with. Why not take the gray out of this one and make it a black and white issue like offside is? We're sitting there, you know, looking at millimeter examinations of player skates, but this one we leave up to, you know, the gray area. It just seems odd to me that this one is up for interpretation when it comes to player safety, but something like offside isn't.
Yeah, I think if I'm just to put myself on the other side of that debate just to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think I see it from your perspective, though. It's a situation that you're trying to prevent where a goalie shakes his helmet off or takes minor contact, the helmet goes off in an obvious, you know, scoring chance situation. And maybe they have, you know, they've considered it difficult to establish, you know, whether 1 second or what the number is on that. I'm trying to just guess at reasons why that may not exist. Right. That ideally, if you put it in a human being's hand, they can say, oh, yeah, he didn't put it into the puck right away. Something else happened. But in this situation, they got it wrong. And I think that the refs on the ice, based on what Josh Morrissey said, based on what Rick Bowness said to reporters who were in Dallas, that the explanation they got was that Morrissey pushed Ben. All the explanations that they got were about the goaltender interference situation. And I think I interpret that to mean the referees on the ice in that moment of chaos were so fixated on that contact that they didn't consider their own rule. They didn't have that playing in the back of their mind about an immediate and impending scoring chance. And I realize I'm not in the referees' heads. You know, maybe they did and they just considered it immediate and impending, and I'm wrong about that. But I honestly don't think they were even thinking about that at the time, based on all the explanations being about goaltender interference. So I guess what I'm ending on is I get it, because if you leave it to discretion, discretion can get it wrong. Right. And in a case of player safety, where there's a really, in this example of the play, a really obvious, well, Hellebuck didn't mean to have his helmet cut off, take off, right? Like, he didn't just go like this, show the bedhead, and then have the puck go in, and it's like, oh, okay, well, like, he prevented it as just like gamesmanship. So I don't, in this situation, it would have been so cut and dry to dry it up exactly the Drew way, I think.
Yeah, the Drew way. It just sounds, it rolls off the tongue. I think everything from now on should just be the Drew way.
Well, and the thing is, Murat, like, the Jets won the game, so maybe, you know, we're Jets fans especially, you're not as mad, but I feel like, you know, my point was, I don't think anybody's opinion has changed after they saw that last night. If anything, it's strengthened, right? So it's kind of similar to the Shifley-Evans situation, even though that to me is more clear-cut. But again, we won't revisit that, because that was a couple of years ago. But I think there's no doubt that, you know, we're going to be talking about that for a few weeks. I wanted to ask you about Cole Perfetti, because I think his goal was lost. It was obviously the first goal that the Jets scored, but with all the other goals and everything that was going on in the third period, that was lost a little bit. But I was telling the boys on the post-game show, the thing that I liked the most was the humble celebration. And this is obviously a guy who, you know, hasn't been scoring as many goals as he would like lately. And the two-on-one with Wheeler the other night was a fantastic chance. But I wanted to ask you just what you've been seeing out of Perfetti, because to me, that can be a goal that hopefully leads to a little bit of an explosion, and, you know, he starts to put the puck in the net a little bit more. But just what did you think of that goal overall, and just Perfetti's game over the last, you know, week or so?
Yeah, I'll start in the past. You know, you go a few games ago, and there were plays dying on Cole Perfetti's stick that you didn't really like to die on Cole Perfetti's stick. He's such a smart player. He's so good with the puck. He's so offensively gifted. I thought that, you know, in the 3-4 game stretch leading up to, you know, maybe the Carolina game or so, you didn't really see him generating the chances that you are used to and hope for from a guy with his skill in a top six role. So I thought, I had begun to wonder to myself, like, hey, you know, the initial fire of the early season when that line was creating a lot of chances with Dubois and Wheeler, had the rigors of the NHL schedule and grind begun to catch up to him? Was there, you know, I had begun to wonder about Cole Perfetti's game in those few games. And then against Dallas, like you mentioned, wait, nope. Against Minnesota, like you mentioned, he gets that 2-on-1 chance with Wheeler. He doesn't score. There's a play where Wheeler and Perfetti work together to blow coverage defensively. I don't think it's either one of them, but I think there was a bit of a miscommunication about who was going to the top and who was going to the bottom to cover the eventual goal score. I think it was Minnesota's third goal of that game.
That was Foligno's goal.
Okay, yeah.
I believe that's the one you're talking about, yeah.
And then, you know, there's a giveaway on a different shift you don't like and a penalty. And it looks like a clearly undisciplined penalty to me that you don't like. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a good situation for him. At the same time, in Minnesota, you can look to, say, Wheeler's giveaway, Dubois' penalties, Wheeler's own penalty early, as similarly costly. They didn't get benched. Cole Perfetti sat out the entirety of the third period. So you're entering the Dallas game with a young player who's not been benched at the NHL level before, unless you count that few minutes against Carolina where a whole group of guys came off to protect that lead. So like Perfetti was benched for that situation. And he needed a bounce back as bad as the Winnipeg Jets did. You know, if there was a symbol of a bounce back, it was Cole Perfetti, given that he was taken off of the ice for a full period. And for him to make that play on his very first shift was a statement. Whatever happened, in the ensuing days between coach and player, between player and self, all of that sort of stuff, he came out like gangbusters, specifically him against Dallas. And it wasn't just the goal. First of all, beautiful pass by Wheeler. It was placed so well that Perfetti had space behind Hakanpää almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And then he makes the move. He makes the backhand deke. like you say, a humble celebration. He wasn't scoring his 50th or anything like that. I thought that was a perfect moment to encapsulate bounce back. And then guys like, this is a Perfetti monologue now, but in the game, he goes on to lead the Jets in individual expected goals. So individual expected goals that came off of his stick specifically, in scoring chances as per the natural stat trick, in individual shot attempts, he's tied for the lead. So it looked like it lit something under him in exactly the way that you want. And if it's the beginning of something great, Ezra, like you said, then it was exactly what needed to happen.
Well, Murat, speaking of statements, Josh Morrissey is making a statement that he is for real. I mean, I don't know how many people, 19-game mark, had Josh Morrissey leading the Winnipeg Jets in points and what he's doing game in, game out for this Winnipeg Jets club. So what are you seeing from number 44 this season?
I mean, I'm amazed. I really am. So for somebody to have everything go right, you know, it's a situation. Hockey's a game where shifts happen, stuff happens, bounces happen. The fact that he ended up with two breakaways in overtime at all in this week is, things working out well. But look at the plays that he made on them. Look at the plays he's been making all season. And it was Jason Robertson who he burned by to take a fairly neutral situation into a clear-cut break, in overtime last night. And that's an impressive accomplishment. I think that for me, and Morrissey's big bounce back was last year. You know, he had a full proper off season. He was able to process feelings in and around his dad. He had proper training for the first time because the year before he had modified what he could do in a COVID situation to be with his dad as much as possible. So there was an explosiveness in his game last year. There was a bounce back to the type of production that you'd imagine. And then this is beyond that. And I think that what makes it beyond that for me has been the quality of his skating. And I don't know how a 26 or 27-year-old, I don't know his age right offhand, but I'm somebody that age gets faster at this age, or maybe even stronger is the thing, because there are times where he's accelerating like that while staying low and fighting off bodies as well as protecting the puck and generating offense. So for me, the thing that makes him go from good defenseman, worthy of the top pairing role, had a great year last year, to leading the way right now, is just the degree to which he is flying out there on the ice. He is skating so well, so agile, and the speed comes from that.
Scott Niedermeyer-esque.
Yeah, one of his idols, actually. You know, I asked him a couple of weeks ago, who do you admire in terms of how people have been mobile through the years? Scott Niedermeyer was the first name he mentioned. That's a nice poll.
Yeah, well, I'm a Devils fan, right? And he's one of my favorite players of all time. But honestly, that's the way he looks and skates. And the thing with Niedermeyer is he was just as good defensively as he was offensively, right? And that's I think, the big difference here. Morrissey has been an excellent defenseman for many years. And you make some really good points about the explosiveness of his skating and everything like that. Because, I mean, he just took – it was like a rocket ship. And Jason Robertson is not a slouch. And I think it was kind of poetic justice that Robertson tied the game up and then Morrissey was involved with Ben with the shove, right? And then Morrissey scored. That's why I correctly predicted the goal. My first right prediction, I think, in 7 years. But Morrissey, I mean, he has just been incredible. And, you know, I love the Norrissey talk. And obviously, you know, it's too early to start giving people the Norris trophy. But he is playing at that, like, he to me is playing like a top 10 NHL defenseman.
And who knew all that had to happen for that was Rick Bonus had to say, do it. Just
be a top 10 defenseman. Yeah, just be top 10.
Josh Morrissey says, okay.
Well, you know, Dave, we joke about that, but Bonus is almost telling Morrissey, you know, be a little more selfish. And we know, you know, from our interactions with him, and we know from, you know, his reputation about how nice of a guy Morrissey is. So maybe you sort of need that nudge from a veteran established head coach to say, yeah, it's okay for you to go take over a game. I mean, you know, sometimes it's not necessarily ingrained in a guy. They have to learn that, yeah, that's okay for you to go do that. Be your best version of yourself might mean being a little selfish. And I think we're maybe seeing a little bit of that from Josh Morrissey to the benefit of the Winnipeg Jets, not to the detriment. Usually you hear the word selfish and it's like, oh, here we go again. But this is a positive change from the Winnipeg Jets perspective. Sorry, go ahead, Murat.
I was just going to say, I'd be remiss not to mention the way that the team has changed, the way that it plays too.
Of course.
Because there were stretches of last year where, say, the Jets were down one or two goals and suddenly the reins came off. Morrissey go, and he'd be flying in the third period as the Jets tried to create a comeback of some kind. But that wasn't the default. And certainly the forwards weren't supporting the defensemen as well as they do now. So, again, it's you know, sometimes in this case, I think part of it is the team's success creating the opportunity for a guy to jump up, in addition to bonus giving him the green light. That's how I saw it.
Two games in a row, Murat, that the Jets have given up power play goals, and Mark Scheifele has been on the ice in a penalty-killing role in both situations. Is this an anomaly to you, or do you think that Rick Bowness is really trying to maybe consider this as a legitimate option for the team's PK? Because the results haven't been pretty so far, not to say that Scheifele is solely responsible for it. And the one against the Minnesota Wild was obviously when the game was well out of hand at that point in time. But how do you see this Scheifele as PK experiment shaking out over the next little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, Winnipeg, with the other team having an extra skater in any context right now, is a bit a bit of a mess. But I think with Scheifele and Bonus, there's a good relationship formed there. It seems like almost immediately, you know, Scheifele has had nothing but positive things to say. Whenever there's a problem, Bonus talks to him about it first. He respects that. There's an ongoing dialogue, etc. So I think that this, I'm interpreting, I don't know this. Sometimes I, you know, this is the result of a conversation that has been had with reporters or something, but I interpret it as Bonus taking Scheifele's development sort of to the next step, or what he views the next step as. You know, you're a tremendous offensive player. You've put in work in terms of improving your defensive game. You're not Sean Couturier or Ryan O'Reilly yet. Couturier is hurt. O'Reilly's not having a good season. I need updated.
Patrice Bergeron. Just go with Bergeron. He's always the perfect answer.
You're going to be safe until we're all gray. And
yes.
So yeah, he's not Bergeron yet, but you know the effort has been there, and you know maybe it's an opportunity to try to continue to round out Scheifele's game, and maybe if there's an increased defensive, if that becomes part of what earns him his offensive minutes, maybe you get even more results out of the team. The one thing that I'll say, because it's not going well so far, is that a few years ago, Scheifele and Wheeler would sometimes be used as PKers under Paul Maurice, and their numbers ended up looking really good, not because they were gifted shot blockers like Brandon Tanev in their own zone, but because they attacked that zone entry attempt. They did so well in the neutral zone. Blake Wheeler was flying at that era, and Scheifele was very quick, and they were given the green light to be really aggressive at their own blue line. They just kept pucks out of their own end. It was this really torrid stretch of penalty killing a couple of years ago. So there are ways where Scheifele can be successful, even if the in-zone stuff isn't as good. And, you know, we'll see how it goes for him.
Right, last question for me here. I got to ask you about, you mentioned Axel Janssen-Fjällby earlier. I was telling Dave, like, I realize he's only got the one goal. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was against Vegas, but I know that he's only got the one goal, and I think he's only got the one assist. By the way, can we agree that the fact that Nate Schmidt just got his first assist is bonkers? Like, I couldn't believe that. Like, I just assumed he had five or six assists, so I was really surprised on the broadcast when Dan Robertson and Kevin Sawyer mentioned that. But Axel Janssen-Fjällby, to me, it has been, you know, for a waiver wire pickup, like, to me, this is a guy that the Jets should sign to a 2 or 3 year deal. Like, I love his energy. He might miss the net quite a bit, but his speed and his energy, and you can tell, like, you know, he was going up to Hellebuck, and you know, you could just see that he's a really well-liked player, even though I'm not, you know, in the dressing room like you are, and I don't, you know, travel with these guys or anything like that, but it just seems like Janssen-Fjällby is a popular guy. He's got good flow like yourself. I mean, this just seems like a guy who's got a future here in Winnipeg.
I mean, thank you, but not in the same league as that man's flow. And, I think that he's a really interesting player in terms of the difference between when Winnipeg has the puck and when it doesn't. And, you know, I'm with you on the fact that he's been a tremendous pickup. Credit to the pro scouts, credit to Scott Arneil, who I'm sure had influence over that decision. And there's been a long line of Winnipeg Jets who are extremely popular because of how hard they work. And, you know, for all of the analytics nerds out there, you know, out there with your calculators, that stuff still matters.
We say that with love, of course. I think nerds was said with a tongue firmly in cheek there.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I'm one myself.
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The gesture of working that hard, of turning pucks over, of laying the body, of chasing people down, of, you know, getting the pucks into your teammates' hands, and how hard and how fast he works, that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he is popular for that reason, because he never shorts a play. And I think that Fjällby has been one of, or Jonsson Fjällby, pardon me, has been one of the best in terms of winning pucks back for the Winnipeg Jets, which has in recent years been a bit of a struggle. And I think that for that reason, Ezra, I can understand if they keep him around and he becomes part of the fabric of this team for a while, that will be exactly why it makes sense to me. And then the only thing that I'll say is that sometimes there's a lot of noise in terms of the hits and the forecheck and chasing things down, and Winnipeg gets the puck. And then after Winnipeg gets the puck, there isn't as much capability, I would say, offensively. And so for me, that either means, you know, keep him in that bottom six, pure defensive role, or put him as an energy bunny, energizer bunny, onto lines where there's a lot of skill with the puck and you just need somebody to add a bit of sandpaper.
Well, Murat, you know, one of the things that looks like it's happening, which we weren't sure of, was Morgan Barron's return, because he was 4 days ago or 5 days ago, he was a ways away, and now he is potentially going to play on Tuesday. So if you're Rick Bowness and the coaching staff, and you now have to make a lineup decision, because of course Morgan Barron's return means one of those forwards has to leave, what are you doing? Because Mikey Essiemont, to me, seems to have found his role here with the Jets. He's, you know, like I've talked about, opportunity creates that, you know, just that for a guy like him, where he has that consistency, the ability to play more than one game in the NHL, doesn't have to necessarily look over his shoulder, because he knows that he's most likely going to be able to get comfortable in that role, play some games, and we're seeing what he did. And like I've talked to him about, you know, 4 years, was this idea that he selected Winnipeg because he saw an opportunity for himself to be a player in the NHL. So with that in mind, if you're making the decision with Morgan Barron coming back, presumably potentially on Tuesday, what are you doing with the lineup?
I mean, yeah, big, tough question. And like, let's not skirt it with, I don't know, but there's a group of players whose roles are extremely similar, whether they're on the third line or on the fourth line. And, you know, Mikey Essiemont would be one of those. Jansen Harkins on his opposite wing right now, Saku Mäntylainen and Axel Jonsson Fjällby. I think of those four players, Jonsson Fjällby is the most established and the most, I would not take that player out of the lineup right now. I think he's winning an extreme amount of pucks. He's one of the Jets' key PKers, et cetera, et cetera. Not that other players in of those group can't do that. They have at various levels, to be sure. I wonder if it's time that it's Saku Mäntylainen that would come out. Mm-hmm. I know that if you go by last one up, first one down sort of situation, it might be Harkins, it might be Essiemont that comes out of the lineup to make way for Morgan Barron. But they've just accomplished so much of late, and they were bumped up to the third line as a result of their work and determination. And then you have Essiemont making the box out that lets the puck get to, was that Adam Lowry who passed it across to Harkins? He one times it into the net. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you're like, well, hey, you kind of like that, don't you? I mean, that's a nice group of players, all working extremely hard. So for me, I take another look at that third line that was just created. It has to be one. I'm not pulling David Gustafsson out. No. You need somebody who can win a faceoff, and then it's between Jonsson Fjällby and Mäntylainen, and for me it might be Mäntylainen just at this moment.
I concur.
Yes, as do I, which might be a scary thought for you, Murat, that you have a consensus from us. But one last one for you. With Barron seemingly, as he's about to have an imminent return to the lineup, you know, there's been a lot of talk. Do the Jets go out and maybe get a head start on the trade market, given that they're off to a very good start this year? Does that sort of mitigate the need to shore up, you know, maybe the bottom six or a third line player with Nicholas, particularly with Nikolai Ehlers' absence? Or do you think that, you know, that should still be something the Jets might be interested in doing, not subtracting from their active roster necessarily, not making a big splash, but maybe trading a draft pick to see if they can just add another body, because the depth of the team has certainly been tested throughout the first, you know, 19, 20 games of this season?
Yeah, for me, I don't think that there's as much pressure to make a trade right now as maybe I've seen in some other reports and things like that. Like, okay. I know the Nikolaj Ehlers is, you know, going to be gone for a while, and there's going to be a question about how good he is when he comes back as well. I mean, the, you know, sports hernia surgery, I believe it's very similar to the Andrew Kopp situation in Detroit. And, you know, he missed a couple months of camp and, you know, came into the beginning of the season, and he hasn't really looked like Andrew Kopp of last season yet. He's still taking a while to get his feet under him. And if there's a little bit of that for Nikolaj Ehlers, well, even if he's the quote unquote trade deadline day addition, you know, it may take a month. It may be playoffs or maybe next season before he's wheeling exactly as we imagine him to. So I get that Winnipeg's going through it. And even with Ehlers in the lineup, if you're daydreaming and you want to be a fan on a Saturday morning and think, well, hey, they've won a lot of games, what about a deep playoff run? What about a cup run with this particular core group while it lasts, which I don't think any of us were talking about heading into this season. But if you want to indulge it, then yeah, Winnipeg probably needs to make additions, Ehlers or no Ehlers, health or no health, to bolster itself. But I don't think that that was... I don't think that was the plan going into the season for the Winnipeg Jets. And I don't mean don't win the Stanley Cup. I mean, you know, maxing out the cap, trading futures for the present, all of that sort of stuff. Right. It's a team that's traded a lot of futures for the present in recent years and has only just started to get out of that habit. And as long as Winnipeg's winning and there's a sense that Barron's back, and then, you know, it'll be several weeks yet, I suppose, for Mason Appleton, all of the rest. Mm-hmm. There may not be that pressure as long as the Jets maintain their playoff spot. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Jets seize the day. I'm not sure. I read these dissertations on how they must, and I don't see it the same way.
Well, that's why we have you on. Different opinions, different opinions from different folks. Murad Atesh of The Athletic Winnipeg, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you, our good friend. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for waking up with us. We'll let you maybe get some breakfast, some coffee. I'm not sure. Is it bacon and eggs? Is it, you know, maybe some vegan free-run eggs? I'm not sure what's on the breakfast docket for you, but whatever it is, I hope it's delicious.
You know, I'm a passionate omelet guy, so we'll see what we can get going. Thanks for bearing with me. I felt like a teenager, you know, just sort of sleeping through after working late.
I admire anybody.
Was it the snooze button or was it the AM PM?
Well, honestly, I think that it was the snooze. You know, I think the alarm was set and there are some questionable decisions made in a semi-conscious state.
By the way, I feel like there could be a spinoff here, like Mornings with Murat, and to see what he's made. Like, I feel like there could be a spinoff YouTube show here, like just... It could just be omelets, or it could be like different meals, or I don't know, but I would watch.
I think the cooking show. Channel. If you're out there and you can produce this thing, like, I'm in. We'll talk.
There you go. Stay tuned for Murat's cooking channel coming up here soon on the Illegal Curve YouTube channel as well. Murat, I'm bitterly jealous of anyone who gets to sleep until 9:30, but thanks for joining us this morning. We'll catch up again real soon. Always appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, take care. Bro. There he goes, Murat Atesh of The Athletic, our good friend, joining us here this morning on the program. Still to come on the show, Charlie Remouliotis of NBC Sports Chicago is going to join us to talk about the Blackhawks. That's at the bottom of the hour, the Jets into Chicago on Sunday, of course, and much more on the Winnipeg Jets after these commercial messages. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg, spending your Saturday morning with you. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you, but why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, that was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
10:15, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live here on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button. You get a warm place in Dave M's heart when you do that. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to all of our podcasts. Visit the website. Make sure you're following us on Facebook and Instagram. Do all these things. You get extra entries into the Illegal Curve contest, the merchandise contest, by doing all these things. So check it out, you know, link to it through our contest page, which you can find, of course, in the show description and on our website, illegalcurve.com.
I'm pretty sure every time we get a new subscription or we get a new like on a YouTube video, I think actually a young kitten finds a new home.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's yeah. You always want those kittens to find a home. I thought you were going to say Dave M gets wings because he's an angel, but you know, the young kitten getting a home is also something that I'm quite happy.
And as you know, Drew, I'm allergic to cats. Come on, it's kittens. So.
Yes, exactly. Right.
By the way, did you see what Connor Hellebuck's agent tweeted?
That's what I'm about to read. So we got two things to discuss before the bottom.
I really wish I had access to the dark web.
And I think you need the dark web for this.
Not that we haven't talked about this enough, but I think it's notable to mention.
This is Connor Hellebuck's agent, Ray Petkow, who's of course from Winnipeg. Yep. So it's it's relevant. This is a tweet: in the NHL, a skater is penalized if he plays without a helmet. And then in brackets, he says safety reasons. But if a goalie's helmet is knocked off through no fault of his own, the opposing team can pass the puck around and fire shots on net and play is not stopped because, quote, scoring chances. Got it. And you can feel the sarcasm and the disdain dripping in that got it comment from Ray Petkow. And he's 100% right.
Yep.
This is, regardless of what team, you read that quote, you read that tweet and you think about it logically and you take emotion out of the equation and it just makes logical sense. So the NHL needs to really look at this one again. They need to look at their interpretation of this one. They need to.
Well, really, also again, like back. I said, you can't help but laugh at the fact that Pavelski got an assist, then Sagan got an assist, and then Robertson scored the goal.
Right.
Like I said, nobody's saying anything as much if it goes Ben Robertson goal. That's more clear cut. But for it to go Ben, Pavelski gets a touch, Sagan gets a touch, and like Murat said, he's got his back to the net. So he passes it back to Robertson, who's got a clear shot.
Yeah.
And so that again, like I said, you can want to interpret it, you can liberally interpret it as much as you can. But when three players touch the puck from the guy who had the initial contact that caused the situation, I'm sorry, it's clear. And so we spent the first 20 minutes talking about it, but I mean, I saw his comment. I thought it was interesting, worth noting, as did you, Drew.
But now you can understand why we spent 20 minutes talking about it.
Because the NHL world is talking about it.
Well, exactly. Hellebuck's agent has to, obviously is still fired up about it enough, even though Hellebuck got the win and the Jets got the win, right, Dave?
So we also don't
have it. It's still, it's enough that Ray Petkow felt that the need I'm assuming he tweeted that out in the last half an hour or something. Or yeah, in the last this
10 morning, o'clock. Basically. So it was 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, so 20 minutes ago. So this is the morning after. So obviously, you know, it's bothering him. It's bothering Hellebuck. Because he's not going to, I don't think he's just going to go Lone Ranger here.
No, I mean, this isn't Alan Walsh piercing Pete the Boar with a sword. This is, this one isn't.
Well, I mean, he's got no, I mean, think about it. It's not like he's got to worry about the NHL. Like, no. He's an agent. They don't worry. They're not sitting there going, I got to keep the NHL happy. It's you keep your clients happy. Exactly. And look, at the end of the day, his client could have, received a serious injury if that puck goes awry. So I don't have an issue with what he's saying, because I think we've said it
throughout the
course of the show.
Well, you know, and Frosty Winnipeg says, hey, HNIC will talk about it tonight. Hockey Night in Canada will talk about it.
I was going to tell you, if you didn't know what that acronym stood for, I was going to help you out there.
I've never heard anybody call it HNIC for the record, but go on.
You've never heard anyone call it HNIC?
I've never said, I mean, obviously it's Hockey Night in Canada, but I've never heard anybody say HNIC. Who says HNIC?
You're saying, Dave, that you've seen it written out, but you've never seen someone.
I've never heard anybody say HNIC. Like, I mean, I've never actually seen, like,
written form or verbal form?
No, in written form, obviously, I've seen it. What I'm saying, I've never heard someone verbalize it as HNIC.
I would say HNIC.
That's what I mean.
I would not say HNIC.
HNIC is very unusual. HNIC would have been okay.
Drew's an eccentric guy. I mean, like, you know, Drew likes to.
Thank you. All I know is Spencer Sutton's got my back. HNIC. Remember, I want Primetimer to be understanding.
Got our back.
And I know, but I want Primetimer to understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying HNIC. HNIC would have been fine, but to call it HNIC, very unusual.
Yeah.
And look, I'm a trendsetter. Right. So once everybody starts calling it HNIC, which we know is going to happen because
nobody's going to call it that.
I'm an influencer.
You're something, all right, but it ain't an influencer.
I'm a guy that calls it GIF, not GIF.
I do agree though that I think they are going to talk about it on tonight's broadcast, which tells you that it is.
I'm really looking forward to Coach's Corner tonight.
That it is something that's resonating throughout the NHL because it was so blatant and so ridiculous that it's going to bump whatever Leaf-centric news that they were normally going to talk about. Matt Murray and the goalposts. This is going to get rolled in there as a subject matter, I believe.
I'd like to hear Kevin Bieksa go off on it as a defenseman.
Well, I'm curious I'm curious about maybe, other people's opinions.
Or Kelly Rudy, to be honest with you, from the goaltender's perspective. Yep. Kelly Rudy would have a lot to say about this, I imagine, so we'll have to wait and see. But yes, I mean, this is something that we talked about will be, like, again, Hellebuck's agent felt the need to tweet that out in the morning the day after the game, even though the Jets ultimately won the game. So it kind of shows you that it's just one of those controversial plays that, is still just as controversial as it was, last night at 10 o'clock.
Absolutely. I would agree with that entirely. Another piece of news, not Jets related, but certainly going to be one that a lot of people in Winnipeg are going to be happy about. And I think I saw Bailey reference it in the chat earlier. Willie Jefferson, star defensive end for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He has re-signed a one-year contract extension keep him in Winnipeg. Of course, his family, I think, has set up roots here. So it's not an overwhelming surprise, but still nice to see nonetheless that Willie Jefferson going to stay as a member of the Blue Bombers. He was set to become a free agent in February. Instead, he's going to spend at least another year in the blue and gold. Jeez, I'm getting raped.
Thank you.
Over the coals.
Thank you.
By the way, Gordy won a Tough Duck 2-2 last night. So, yes, Gordy, you have to email me, Ezra@illegalcurve.com, if you haven't already. I wasn't sure if you, because some people win toques and then they sign out. Anyways, Gordy, get in touch with me.
Jay, not only am I regretting the whole HNIC thing, I think I'm regretting agreeing to be the host of this show, given the slings and arrows that are coming my way.
Well, I do. I got to call you out sometimes. And that was like, you guys were looking at me like I had two heads. I was like, what am I missing here?
Edition of the Ick Hockey Show.
I would swear, I'd put money on it that when we were teenagers, this is going back many, many, many moons
years
ago.
For you here, Drew.
Yes, thank you. And we would get together to watch hockey on Saturday night. That's the sort of slang that we used.
No.
We were saying, hey, are we watching HNIC tonight?
No, that was not a thing. No.
Drew, remember, you didn't have any friends growing up. So, I mean, that was maybe you talking to yourself in the mirror.
Right. I said it to my stuffies and they never answered. I was hoping somebody was going to answer me. I'm going to ask.
Hey, I can't wait to do the show topics in the podcast later and be like, is HNIC a thing or is it HNIC?
What was the nickname that Drew was called in the hockey dressing room?
Skippy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, Skippy?
That's the only nickname I've ever had in my life. It was a bad nickname. It didn't really make it. The reason why is my. Well, I'll tell you exactly where it came from. When I got my first pair of glasses, and okay, we're down the rabbit hole here, folks. As only we can do.
This is a Ginsburg type tangent right now.
I want more people calling Drew Skippy. That's what I want.
Well, we've talked about this on the air before, but it's always important to rehash these important situations. When I got my first pair of glasses when I was 7, I think. I went over and showed them to my neighbors because I was proud of having glasses, and my neighbor's brother. I was friend, you know, we were close family friends, of course. He said to me that I looked like Skippy from Family Ties. So if you want to go back and if you remember Family Ties starring Michael J. Fox and
Alan Thicke was on.
No, that was Growing Pains.
That was Growing Pains. Okay, yeah. So
with remember who was on Growing Pains too? As a young Leonardo DiCaprio.
Correct.
There you go. As
he was the troubled youth who joined them late.
What was the show where there was a character named Boner?
Oh, that was Degrassi Junior High, wasn't it?
No, that was Snake and Wheels.
There wasn't a.
I think there was a Boner. Pretty sure there was a Boner. I just got a Boner right now.
No, there was a show with a character named Boner.
Yes, there was.
Growing Pains.
It might have been Growing Pains. Yeah.
No, Turd saying it's Growing Pains.
Boner on.
Turd Ferguson is saying that it was Growing Pains.
Great. So, that's all I need. Is Ezzy typing in Boner in my search parameters?
Turd Ferguson was the one that helped me figure out who
Dave's
going
to get a lot of Cialis ads on now on his searches thanks to Ezzy typing that in on his Wi-Fi.
This is really going off the rails today, boys.
There you go. Boner Stabone was Mike's best friend on Growing Pains. So thank you, Turd Ferguson.
Seaver. Wasn't the last name Seaver?
Yeah, that's right. It was the Seaver family. You're absolutely Seaver right. Family. Anyway, that's why my nickname.
Wow, this is quite a segue.
That's why my nickname was that all those years ago. Wow, this has tremendously been probably the best segment we've done.
I'd like to see
while.
How Drew's going to get this back on the rails after we were talking.
He's going to probably go to commercial, I guess.
You're exactly right, Dave. That's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to commercial, and I'm going to be thankful that Charlie Remouliotis from NBC Sports Chicago is up next so that we can get this show back on the rails, talking about the Jets, their next opponent in Chicago. The Blackhawks, obviously, struggling this year, to put it mildly. They started off well, but I think everyone sort of expected that they were going to fall a little bit off, and they have as of yet 2-6-2 in the last 10. The Jets into Chicago on Sunday, post game show 8:45 back here on our YouTube channel. Charlie Remouliotis of NBC Sports Chicago up next. Thank you to everybody. This is Skippy signing off until after these commercial messages. 10:30 in the morning, we're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We've experienced our growing pains, but now we're back to show you who's the boss, and the boss on the Chicago sports media scene talking about the Blackhawks is Charlie Remouliotis of NBC Sports Chicago. Charlie, if you missed that reference, we were went down a rabbit hole of sort of 1980s sitcoms in the previous segment.
Wow.
So that explains the odd introduction you may have just received.
I was going to say, that's maybe the best intro I've ever had into a radio show, so I thank you guys for that.
It's our pleasure. We appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning to talk about the Blackhawks, Charlie. Second time the Jets and the Blackhawks are going to do battle this year. When Chicago first visited Winnipeg, they were sort of overperforming, let's say. They'd been on a good stretch to start the year. They'd sort of surprised some teams, as most people had them pegged to be towards the bottom of the league, and deliberately so at the bottom of the league based on their offseason moves. Since then, that sort of inevitable tailspin that we expected has occurred. You know, from your perspective, is this the real Blackhawks team, the 2-6-2 team? 2-6-2 team that we've seen over the last 10 games, or is it closer to the team that sort of overperformed earlier in the year?
Yeah, I think we're seeing water find its level. And I will say that 2-6-2 team the last 10 games prior to the other night, they didn't have Seth Jones. So that definitely added to the fact that they were on this hot run at the beginning of the year. Then they lose their number one defenseman. They've actually gotten plagued with injuries this season. Tyler Johnson went out with an injury, and he was in the second line role. And then they were obviously dealing with injuries to both Peter Mrazek and Alex Stalak at the same time. And in Winnipeg, Dylan Wells, the fifth string goalie for Chicago, had to come into the game. So it was a little bit of a disaster in their last meeting against Winnipeg. But yeah, I do think water is finding its level here with Chicago now.
Charlie, I really enjoyed the article that you had for NBC Chicago recently, asking in the headline, at least it was, you know, did the Blackhawks make a mistake by trading Kirby Dach? And, you know, in the article, you know, you mentioned that, I mean, it's way too early to say if it was a mistake, because of course, Frank Nazar was the draft pick that Chicago, the Chicago's draft pick that they got from Montreal. But, you know, we have to talk about the shootout winning goal. Like, I follow you on Twitter. And I mean, it was like poetic justice, right? Like Kirby Dach scores the shootout winner, and he does the Hulk Hogan. Yep. If you haven't seen it, you know, puts his ear to the Blackhawks fans, because of course the game was in Chicago, right? So, I mean, just what were your thoughts about that shootout winner? And then also just, you know, the trade, because obviously Dach is having a good start to the season with the Habs. But the Hawks are very high on Frank Nazar. They're expecting him to be a big part of the future for this team.
Yeah, well, it was kind of funny because Dach wasn't really very noticeable in the game. And then he gets thrown out there for the third round of the shootout, and of course scores the game winner and kind of sticks it to Chicago a little bit. So I'm sure that definitely felt good for him personally. But I think if you do revisit that trade, I still think that might end up being a win-win for both parties, both the Blackhawks and Canadiens. When the Blackhawks moved on from Kirby, they were trying to change the identity of their team. They weren't necessarily giving up on Kirby. Like, they didn't believe in him as a player. I think they just thought, listen, we want to play fast. We want to play up tempo. We want to have competitive character guys. And I think you saw that even with the moves that they made a few days later, when they didn't bring back Dylan Strome, they didn't bring back Dominic Kubalik. Like, they really wanted to alter the makeup of their team. And I think it was a little bit noteworthy that they did. They moved Kirby Dach for a 13th overall pick and drafted another center, right? So it was basically like swapping centers. It was like, rather than the power forward type center, like, let's go get a speedy two-way offensive center. And that's what they got in Frank Nazar. But unfortunately, like you said, he's out with an injury. So I think ultimately Montreal got the player they want, right? Potential top six forward. I know he's playing on the wing right now, but he definitely looks like a fit there with Nick Suzuki. And I think Chicago is pretty happy with what they got too, because the Frank Nazar is going to line up better with the trajectory of their franchise.
Saturday morning, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. The Jets into Chicago tomorrow to face the Blackhawks. To preview that and to discuss the Hawks, we're joined by Charlie Rumeliotis. Sorry, Charlie, easy for me to say, of NBC Sports Chicago.
You know, Charlie, you're not going to trade Patrick Kane because he's 0-for-7 in the shootout dating back to last year, which I saw on your Twitter and I was kind of shocked about, but are the Chicago Blackhawks going to trade Patrick Kane? If you had to put on your prognostication hat, do you think that Patrick Kane ends the season wearing a Chicago Blackhawks jersey?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. I think, obviously, with Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, both of them are kind of – they're obviously in the same boat, same salary cap, same situation. But it feels like the bigger fish is Patrick Kane, right? Because you can fetch a haul for him, and he's still playing at a really high level. With Jonathan Toews coming off a down year last year, teams weren't really sure what Jonathan Toews was going to be this year. Now, he has obviously bounced back, but there's still a lot of salary. So a lot of the attention is going to go on Patrick Kane. I still feel like we're going to maybe have better clarity over the next month or month and a half. I feel like once the calendar flips to January is when the talk is going to start to turn. Like, okay, are the Blackhawks I'm sure Patrick Kane and the Blackhawks are going to meet, and they're going to kind of pick each other's brains on what each other's thinking, because Patrick Kane, listen, like, I think he wants to go down as the greatest Hawk ever. I think he wants to finish his career in Chicago. And he's probably bummed at the situation that Chicago is in, but I just don't know if he's going to be able to stomach the next few years, because it's not like the last few years, you know, dating back to 2015, guys, they haven't won a playoff round since the 2015 Stanley Cup final. So, like, it's been a lot of trying years for the last 7-8 years. So I just don't know if he's going to want to stomach that. So that's going to be the million-dollar question. I know it's cliche. Like, I'm sorry I don't have a firm answer for you now, but I do feel like once the calendar hits January is when you're going to see the talks start to heat up again.
You know, Charlie, you look at this team, and there's been some surprise performance so far. I think Max Domi, I would say, has been a pleasant surprise. Blackhawks, you know, sort of an approve it deal, trying to sort of reaffirm himself. He's bounced around so much since he was the high draft pick, of course. You know, disappointing time in Montreal, disappointing time in Columbus. Now he's with Chicago. He's up to 14 points. Are the Blackhawks almost like, you know, a good reclamation project for a lot of guys this year? Might be able to find their game given the opportunity, and there's really no pressure because there's no expectations on them. Is Domi a guy who's sort of seeing that come to fruition so far?
Yeah, I think that's a big reason why Max Domi and maybe a guy like Andreas Athanasiou also signed with Chicago on a one-year deal. Like, they saw this as an opportunity to maybe play top 6 minutes, but also play with a guy like Patrick Kane, where you can maybe inflate your numbers and potentially get a larger payday down the road, because there's no way either of those guys signed with Chicago with the hopes of them being a long-term play with the Blackhawks, given all the moves that they had made over the summer, trading Alex DeBrincat, trading Kirby Dach, moving on from Strom, moving on from Kubalik. Like, they were very clearly an organization that was stripping down its roster. So I think for them, I would be very surprised if either of them is with the Blackhawks beyond the trade deadline.
Charlie, we talked about the goaltending a little bit earlier, you know, talking about Alex Stalock, you know, Peter Mrazek. I mean, Arvid Soderblom, the Jets have already seen him once this year, and I don't know if he's going to get the start tomorrow night. I'm not sure if you've been told that yet, but I mean, this is a very young goaltender, and Stalock, to me, and maybe you can touch on that as well, like, Stalock was a great story. He's a guy that's bounced around a lot, and he was having a great start to the season, so it's unfortunate that, you know, he's injured. But I wanted to ask you, like, is how big of a part of the future is Soderblom? I mean, because forever it was, you know, Corey Crawford, and then there was the Marc-Andre Fleury brief experiment there, right? But I mean, and I don't know enough about the other goaltenders in the Chicago system. I'll admit I'm ignorant on that. But is Soderblom a guy that you think has that number one potential, or is he a starter potential, or is he a guy that they view more as kind of like a backup over the next 2, 3, 4 years?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because his signing kind of flew under the radar. Like, it was like the Blackhawks signing this overseas goaltender in Arvid Soderblom from Sweden, where he was really good, but he was never really considered like a grade A prospect chip, right? But in talking to people with the organization now, like, I was talking to someone in the organization that they felt this is the best goaltending prospect they've had in the Blackhawks organization for the last 8 years. So like, that's saying a lot on where they think of, or how they think of Soderblom. But it's the only other goaltender that they really are high on is Drew Comesso, who was drafted in the second round a couple years ago. He's still only 20 years old, and he's in his sophomore year or junior, I can't remember which one, at BU. I think it's going to be neck and neck for those two players who could be the potential starting goaltender for the Blackhawks in the future. But I do think Arvid Soderblom absolutely has the tools to be that guy if the Blackhawks want to give him that opportunity.
Discussing the Chicago Blackhawks with Charlie Roumeliotis of NBC Sports Chicago. The Jets and the Blackhawks tomorrow night, 6 p.m. start time in the Windy City, which means the Illegal Curve postgame show back here on our YouTube channel right around 8:45 or so tomorrow night.
You know, Charlie, you talked about Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and wanting to stick around for, you know, what could be a long rebuild or whatever, they're retooling, whatever the fashionable phrase is in sports these days. But what about the fan base? How, I mean, you talked about it. This fan base is used to winning Stanley Cups, and, you know, you can't say that, well, you expect that every year, especially with the parity now in the NHL. But how is the fan base handling the Hawks kind of situation, and especially with the impending potentially of trading two, you know, lifelong Hawks in Toews and Kane?
Yeah, I think the Blackhawks fan base actually appreciates the sense of direction, because it feels like the last few years have just been a tug of war, right? It's like, you know, the 2018-19 season, the Blackhawks go out and sign Robin Leonard, and they trade for Andrew Shaw again, and they get Calvin DeHaan, and they make all these additions. And then the next year, they don't re-sign Corey Crawford, and they say they want to get younger and play all the young guys. And then the following year, they go out and get Seth Jones and Marc-Andre Fleury. So it was just like, what kind of direction are the Blackhawks going in? Like, it felt like it changed from year to year. So I think when Kyle Davidson took over as the permanent general manager, he said, this is going to be a rebuild, and we are not going to deviate from this plan. And I think the entire, or a majority of the Chicago fan base really appreciates that direction. I think the tug of war is, for the fan base is there a way that the Blackhawks can rebuild while also keeping Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews in the fold, right? Obviously, Patrick Kane would fetch a significant haul at the trade deadline if he were moved. So that would kind of be beneficial to the Blackhawks in the long term for the rebuild. But it's also like Chicago doesn't want to see 19 or 88 wearing a different sweater. So there really is this tug of war of, you know, can the Blackhawks make it work where Kane and Toews are still part of the fold, but the Blackhawks can also stay on the course of a rebuild?
You know, Charlie, obviously Luke Richardson, first time NHL head coach, well respected from his time in Ottawa, his time in Montreal. You know, how do you think he's handling this situation? Obviously, he knew what to expect. He's not, fooling himself as to what, you know, he has on this roster and the limitations thereof. How has he sort of acquitted himself thus far in his first head coaching stint?
Yeah, he's been really good. And I think a lot of his calm demeanor, the way he prepares for games, like he obviously played 1,400 plus games in the NHL. So he knows exactly what goes into the preparation as a player, as an assistant, and obviously with Montreal and a head coach for a little bit in the AHL Ottawa. So he's definitely padding his resume, and you kind of understand he's been around this for so long. But when the Blackhawks were having such early season success, he was a big reason why. And the one significant change that he did make when he got hired was he changed the way the Blackhawks were playing in the defensive zone. Like they were playing a man-on-man for a few years under Jeremy Colliton, but the Blackhawks just never had the personnel to play that kind of way with the roster that they had. So he came in and he said, we're going back to a zone structure. And I think you see a less scrambly Blackhawks team in their own end. But it's also just psychologically, the guys are playing hard for Luke Richardson. And you'll see this too. Like, how many games in the past few years have we seen the Blackhawks where the score is 4-0 in the first period and the Blackhawks are just fighting from, you know, like they're just kind of playing catch up. It's a much different story this year where, yes, the Blackhawks are losing. I think they've lost close to 12 out of their last 14 now, but they're really competitive in those games. Like a lot of those games have been one goal games this season, or it's getting taken down to the wire. So Luke Richardson is a big part of the fabric of this Blackhawks culture.
Charlie, wanted to ask you about Taylor Radish, because he's a guy that, I mean, he was a second round pick. I forget where exactly he was taken. Doesn't matter, but he was a second round pick. He was acquired in the Brandon Hagel trade, which at the time that was kind of controversial, right? Like Hawks fans, I think a lot of them were kind of mixed, or they were happy with the return. And then obviously Hagel was pretty good, but he wasn't otherworldly for the Lightning, but it worked out pretty well for them because they went to the cup final. But Radish is a guy that every time I watch the Jets and the Hawks play, or I watch the Hawks, like he's a guy that stands out. And, you know, he's still very early in his career. I believe he has 1 year left on his deal, if I'm not mistaken, before he becomes a restricted free agent. But I mean, just how impressed have you been with Radish's play? Because as we talked about, after Kane and Toews and Athanasiou and Domi, I mean, the offense has been a little bit hard to come by. I think you'd agree, right, for the Hawks. But just what have you seen out of Radish? Because to me, it looks like there is a future for him with the Hawks.
Yeah, going into this year, he was my breakout player for the Blackhawks. I just felt like even last year during his brief stint, he was putting up some nice points in a short period of time for the Blackhawks. But then when the Blackhawks trade, you know, they make all those moves where they're subtracting from the roster with Kirby and DeBrincat and Kubalik and Strome, there was a significant amount of ice time that opened up, right? And a lot of that is going to Taylor Radish. He's playing he's basically all season long, he's played on the second line with Jonathan Toews. And he's been getting top power play unit where he majority of the time he's been in that bumper role, but now the Blackhawks are experimenting with five forwards. So it's kind of a lot of things are kind of changing, but yeah, he's getting a significant amount of opportunity. And I do think there's some untapped potential there. And I wouldn't be surprised if he finishes the year with 25 goals, maybe flirts with 45, 50 points. And for him, that would certainly be a breakout year, because he hasn't put together a full season at the NHL level, and he hasn't done it. He hasn't consistently put up that kind of production too.
Charlie, speaking of potential, one guy who has a ton of it, and I've watched him when Rockford comes to town and plays the Manitoba Moose, is a Hawks 2020 17th overall pick, Lucas Reichel, especially when he's burning his cousin Christian Reichel, who played for the Manitoba Moose. So they had some pretty good jabs back at one another. But I mean, when I was watching him play for Rockford, he sure seems like a special player. So what is the plan for him? I know he's in his second year pro over here in North America, but do the Hawks want to keep him in the American Hockey League and let him marinate and let him develop? Or do you think they'll bring him up sooner rather than later?
Yeah, I think he's going to spend the majority of the season in the AHL. The Blackhawks want Lucas Reichel to tell them when he's ready and not necessarily the other way around. The Blackhawks have made some mistakes in the past where, you know, in 2019, they rushed Adam Boqvist to the NHL. He got drafted eighth overall in 2018. And I remember asking him in Dallas, I said, how far away do you think you are from the NHL? And he said, at least 2 to 3 years. He was in the NHL a year later. So like the Blackhawks really rushed him out of necessity. And then with Kirby Dach, when he was drafted in 2019, obviously with that CHL rule, he couldn't play in the AHL. So it was either you're staying in the NHL this year or you're going back to junior. And the Blackhawks kept him on the NHL roster. So they've had a recent history of rushing prospects to the NHL and not letting them over marinate. And I think a big reason why is they were in the organization was in a different spot. Like they were looking to be competitive at that very, like 2009 specific or 2019 specifically. Like you send Kirby Dach back to juniors and you're subtracting a potential top six forward away from the Blackhawks when they had just made all those signings with Robin Leonard and like they wanted to go for it. Right. So I think this year, obviously with the Blackhawks undergoing a rebuild, they want Reichel to tear up the AHL and they kind of want to keep him away from the NHL, not because they don't feel he's necessarily ready, but because he's not going to get a lot of puck touches with the Blackhawks. Like last Saturday, the Blackhawks faced the Bruins. Like they barely touched the puck because Boston was just skating circles around them. So like, that's not good for someone's development when he's not getting puck touches. So they want him to play top line minutes in Rockford, first power play unit time, let him gain the confidence. And when the Blackhawks are back on the upswing and they're a more structured team, then they'll bring him up full time.
Charlie, last question for you. Obviously, Tane and Caves are going to get all the headlines as it pertains to a trade, and all the guys who are on expiring contracts seem likely to be traded. What about a couple defensemen who have some term and as a result have some cost certainty on them, which teams, of course, always love? Connor Murphy, Jake McCabe, both guys who really aren't going to be probably key factors when this rebuild comes to fruition. However many years that takes. Do you see a market potentially for Murphy and McCabe, or do you think the Blackhawks would prefer to keep those guys around just to provide a little bit more insulation to some of their younger defensemen, because it would get real thin real quick behind Seth Jones if Murphy and McCabe are both subtracted as well?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I do think the Blackhawks, they don't want to rush any of their defenseman prospects to the NHL either. So if you do start subtracting some of the guys, then it's you're bringing guys up from Rockford and then they're playing some bottom pairing minutes, or they're playing some heavier minutes at the NHL level, but they shouldn't be playing those kinds of minutes at the NHL yet. So there is going to be this balance where they want to still surround the NHL roster with NHL experience type veteran defensemen. But at the same time, if a team comes calling for Connor Murphy, like, I mean, that's a shutdown right-handed shot defenseman that can play top 4 minutes. Like, that is pretty coveted around the NHL. And I was actually, I shouldn't say a little bit surprised, but like, I thought that was a perfect fit for Toronto once they started getting hit with all those injuries. Yeah. Like, there's a guy that can play in your top four right-handed shot. Maybe he can play with Morgan Rielly when he returns, you know. I know the Toronto Maple Leafs want to be very cautious of the money they're bringing in because they want to pay Austin Matthews and they're going to have these contracts. But I wouldn't be surprised if Connor Murphy does generate some interest at the trade deadline. And if I'm the Blackhawks, I'm definitely moving him if I'm getting a good enough haul in return that would kind of kickstart the rebuild.
Charlie, Rumi Liotis covers the Chicago Blackhawks for NBC Sports in Chicago, the Jets and the Blackhawks tomorrow night. Charlie, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. We'll read your recap of tomorrow night's game and, of course, follow you along for all of the latest Blackhawks news and analysis. Appreciate you. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Charlie.
Take care, Charlie. Thanks again. There he goes, Charlie Rumi Liotis of NBC Sports Chicago, joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this
Saturday.
They're going
to be an interesting team to watch, guys, over the next few years, right? Like, do they trade Patrick Kane? Do they trade Johnny Taves? You mentioned, Drew, like, do they trade a Connor Murphy? I mean, this defense is pretty bad. We've talked about Yeah. I mean, you've got Jared Tenorti and Jack Johnson in your top six, right? Like, I don't know how many other teams in the NHL, except for some bad teams like maybe Arizona and Anaheim, mm-hmm. like those guys just wouldn't be, those guys would be seventh or eighth defensemen on most NHL teams. But when you talk about Frank Nazar, who hasn't played yet this year for the University of Michigan, shout out to Rutger McGroarty, who obviously is having a good rookie season with the University of Michigan. Dave M's been documenting that on social media.
Which, by the way, as an aside, it's crazy. They've had to play some games with like nine forwards.
Adam Fantilli, I don't know if you've looked at his stats lately, but he's having a crazy year. He's projected to go second overall or third overall after Connor Bedard, probably second overall. But and then Kevin Kurchinski on the Seattle Thunderbirds. He was their first round pick as well in the 2022 draft. I mean, so he's going to be a big part of their defense moving forward. Talked about Lucas Reichel. I mean, they've got some really interesting prospects. So, yeah they're going to be bad this year. They're going to be bad next year. But two or three years from now, they're going to be kind of like Ottawa or New Jersey. There's going to be one of those teams that these prospects get older and they start to play full-time NHL minutes. So, I mean, things are going to get better in Chicago. But right now, they're a very bad team.
And, speaking of defensemen, there's a guy that Dave M has been champing at the bit to discuss for much of the last...
Just for Tico Napoli,
15 or 16 hours. Here we go. You know you've been waiting all show for it. There's only one way that we can wrap this up. It is with the...
Put on your antlers. It's time for the Minuk Moose Minute on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, the Minuk Moose Minute. We haven't done one of those in a minute, it seems like. But anyways, I will jump right in and talk about the Moose, who fell yesterday to the Grand Rapids Griffins in Michigan, 3-0. Well, the third goal was an empty net goal. First goal, kind of unfortunate. The Moose don't have, we talked about it, a lot of their guys who play PK are up with the Jets or they're hurt right now. Cole Meyer, he's missed the last, I think, game and a half. So he's been out. Leon Gavanka, he got hurt the last game. He didn't play the 2017 fifth rounder for the Moose. He didn't play last night's game. They did get some good news. Chaz Lucius, the 2021 first rounder, he was back in after missing the last three games. But, you know, the Moose are kind of patchwork right now, and they were trying to get it going after, losing in Milwaukee on Tuesday. And so they're closing out the road trip in Grand Rapids to five-gamer. And last night, Tyrell Bauer in the lineup, what was he? Is he the 2021 seventh rounder, I think, for the Winnipeg Jets, I think. But
might have been 2020, but yeah.
2020. So he's a big boy. And he's physical and he brings an edge, and he fought Ezzie's boy Giovanni Smith and had a huge tilt behind the net in the first period. Smith is a guy who's played some years in the in pro hockey. So he's an experienced guy, and Tyrell Bauer went toe to toe. And it was funny because from all the things that happened in the game, folks seemed to really, that resonated with them, whether it was on Instagram or Twitter. That's what people were jazzed. People like a good tilt. So they
don't
like
see them to, anymore, right? I think that's
you really don't
that fans are excited to see hockey fights because you see them like once every couple of weeks, it seems like.
That's right. And so like and good, it was good tilt and good on Tyrell Bauer for not backing down, and you could see them kind of going at each other, and they actually went at each other pretty much the entire game. I think Smith ended up with about 29 minutes in penalties when all was said and done for Grand Rapids. And pretty much the only other real significant thing that happened in the game was Brad Lambert, the 2022 first rounder of the Winnipeg Jets, attempting the Michigan in Michigan. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you get extra bonus points for that, but he did try the Michigan. It didn't quite
on the ice or in the illegal curve merchandise contest.
No. He could try it maybe in both, but in this instance, it was just on the ice in Grand Rapids in Van Andel Arena, which, by the way, I have to give them a shout out because Grand Rapids, we talk about how bad the cameras are in Texas. Grand Rapids are awesome, but the PA announcer for Grand Rapids, like, so for the Jets, for example, he's up in the press box in their control room, but for the Grand Rapids, he's between the penalty box. So he's usually where the officials are.
So and he old is school like it was in the old Winnipeg Arena. I think
that's and he is. But this guy's this guy's a character. He's literally like he knows he's on camera and he's always playing to the camera. I can't remember his name. It's eluding me right now. But he's hilarious and he's always going and the fans love him. They've got a great atmosphere in Grand Rapids.
Hang on, you know the name or at least can think of the name of the guy who does the scoreboard and the broadcast.
Bob Kaser is his name, Dave.
There you go.
Okay, I'm impressed. You guys, that is some in-depth research that you are doing there for these Manuk Moose Minutes there, Mr. Dave. I know you spend you are the Moose Insider. I did not realize you were also that translated to being the Griffins Insider at the same time.
Well, for the record, so T. Konopoli's asking me.
His guy might be Eric Zane. That's my apologies. I might have been a little quick on the Google. I think it was Eric Zane. I think it is Eric Zane.
That makes more. That sounds familiar. Anyways, so T. Konopoli is saying about the kiss cam, and I actually clipped it, but then I was like, maybe I shouldn't send it. But it was actually hilarious. So they do the kiss cam, and again, that's something. It's unusual because when you're watching the broadcast in the AHL, you kind of see what's happening on the Jumbotron when they cut the commercial. So you're listening to like a Manitoba-based commercial because I was listening to Daniel Fink's broadcast play by play. And all of a sudden, so you're watching the kiss cam, and so the guy goes, he sees he's on the kiss cam, so he gives his partner a kiss, and then he cops a feel. Oh, it was just like, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's quite interesting. And I'm like, you do realize you're on camera, bud, but he didn't seem to mind.
I think it's a callback to the previous segment of Hey Boner.
Yeah, the guy definitely had a boner. So anyways,
the furries last night, and everything else on the last,
kind of like it's kind of like McLovin from Superbad. I've got a boner. The point is that it was an interesting game because actually I thought the Moose were in it. The first goal, like I said, happened just as the penalty elapsed. Christian Reichel had the puck, and you know, I was talking about it with Fink after, and it seemed like Reichel might have looked up at the scoreboard, realized the penalty ended, didn't want to ice the puck. So he didn't get as much on it as he would have normally. And so they were able to keep it in the zone and score just as the penalty to the Moose expired. And then, they took a 2-0 lead. The Moose had some chances, but usually we've seen them this year bounce back in a series and usually win the second game. So they have a chance for a rematch tonight. So we'll see if the Moose can get it done. And also the Ice went into Saskatoon. They won. So they're starting a new streak. They've got two wins in a row, 22-2-0-0 for with the Winnipeg Ice. So they're flying, and I think they're back after tonight. They play in Saskatoon again in a rematch with the Blades, and then they come back, and they're in Winnipeg for a couple of
days. On the topic of the WHL, Winnipegger Dante Genuzzi, who we had on back in the day, I believe he was only 16 at the time, and he was just drafted
15 or 16 the WHL. He was a little baby.
Yeah, he's been incredible. I think his record is 12-1 or 11-1, something like that, but he was named WHL Goalie of the Week, so got to give him a shout-out.
There you go. Good memory there, Ezzy. Yes, we had him back on the old radio station days. The
old terrestrial radio days, Drew. Yeah,
the bad old days, the good old days, whatever it might be. This is the better new days here on the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. We'll be back at it tomorrow, 8:45 p.m., the post-game show after the Jets and the Blackhawks as the Jets wrap up the three-game road trip, and then they're home on Tuesday to face the defending Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche as they a bit different in weight class battle between the Blackhawks on Sunday and then the whiplash effect of then facing the Colorado Avalanche and the dynamic set of players they have there, starting of course with Cale Makar on the back end. No Jared Tenorti's and no Jack Johnson's like you'll see on Sunday in Chicago. No disrespect to those fine gentlemen. Want to say a big thank you to all the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make the Saturday show, the post-game show, and the website a possibility. Frosty Winnipeg has it up on the screen. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, they're the sponsor of the Illegal Curve post-game show, Tough Duck, Winnetouk, tune in on Sunday, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, Grid Park, and The Keg. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, leave us feedback both on the YouTube channel, on the show page, and again on the podcast page. You get bonus entries in the merchandise contest if you comment on our iTunes page, if I'm not mistaken. So do that, of course, because that's a way for you to get more entries and potentially win more prizes. Big thank you to Murata Tesh in hour number one. Big thank you to Charlie Rumiliotis in hour number two. In case you missed any of it, the immediate replay will be on our YouTube channel and the podcast will be up in short order as well. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We thank you very much for joining us. Have a great Saturday, everyone. We'll see you back here tomorrow night for the post-game show. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, Follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.